Crosswires, navigating news with faith with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Crosswires, today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens, from a layman's questions and a clergyman's reaction. Now, here's Chris and Father Daniel.
Hello again, Father Daniel. I'm just back from a quick jaunt to the Caribbean where I dodged some cold weather here.
Oh, gosh. How come you never invite me to these outings, Chris?
Well, it was with my wife, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. The two of you can go alone on that one. Right. Well, anyway, it's good to be back with you. I'm glad you made it back safely. I can see you did not get a suntan.
I put sunblock on when there's a full moon.
Great combo.
According to Open Doors, an organization founded in 1955 by a young Dutchman who distributed Bibles to the Eastern European Soviet bloc countries, not to be confused, by the way, with George Soros's Open Society.
Mm.
So according to this organization, they put out a report each year. Nigeria accounted for 72% of Christians killed for their faith globally in 2025, and that followed 2024, where 82% of Christians killed for their faith was in Nigeria.
Wow.
The surge is due to Muslim militant groups such as Boko Haram in sub-Saharan Africa. Christian clergy are often targeted because their congregations are perceived as being able to provide high ransoms. The 72% figure is particularly striking when you consider that Nigeria is home to roughly 110 million Christians, about half of their population. This means that while Nigeria holds roughly 4 to 5% of the world's Christian population, it accounts for nearly three quarters of the targeted killings.
That's significant.
Yeah, so I know you've done some travels to Africa.
I actually haven't yet.
Oh, I thought you were, I thought as part of your Catholic World Mission, you've...
No, in Catholic World Mission, we have a lot of partners in Africa. But when I took over as board chair about a year and a half later, I was diagnosed with cancer. I couldn't travel for several years, and then we had COVID. So I'm actually planning the first trip of myself being able to go to Uganda this next summer.
Okay.
We're doing a medical mission working with a group that we've got on the ground there in Uganda.
Right. Well, of course, the United Nations had a comment about this targeted killing of Christians. So the United Nations High Commission for Refugees, the UNHCR, weighed in with a report that after last March, a Nigerian Catholic bishop had testified before the U.S. Congress detailing instances where Muslim groups were raiding farmlands in his diocese to rape, murder, and kidnap Christian residents. The UNHCR's conclusion for why these deadly raids were happening was what?
Racism?
Climate change.
No, yes. Are you serious?
Yes.
It had to be one or the other. Gosh, I got my guess wrong. Are you serious?
Yes, you're saying that the Muslim nomads were, because of climate change, their food sources were being disrupted, so they had to raid the farmlands to...
Oh, that explains why we're having the raids here in Georgia, too.
Correct. Right. Climate change.
That's ridiculous. No, I mean, where's the moral responsibility of the individuals involved? Yeah. What is it that is inciting these people to go out and raid other people and kill, rape, and steal?
No, but isn't that a staggering figure? 80% roughly of the Christians killed for your faith are happening in one country, Nigeria, which is in Africa, which is like the only place that Christianity and Catholicism is really rapidly growing.
Right. But interesting aside, it's also the country with the highest participation in mass in any Catholic country, in any country around the world. It's like over 90% of Catholics go to mass every Sunday. So Tertullian's old phrase, you know, the blood of martyrs is the seed of Christianity, holds true here too. I mean, when the faith is persecuted, it grows. So it's beautiful to see that happening in Nigeria, but it doesn't take away the responsibility that we have to try to alleviate that suffering and bring attention to this genocide that's going on in some cases in different places in Nigeria.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires.
I read an article in the Protestant magazine called World, asking why do so many Protestants living in what the author calls power centers, such as Washington, D.C., convert to Catholicism? The magazine notes that according to the Pew Research Center, only 2% of Americans who were raised Protestant are now Catholic, but 14% of Americans raised Catholic are now Protestant. Roman Catholicism loses 8.4 members for each new person who joins. By contrast, Protestantism only loses 1.8 members for each of their new additions. Brad Littlejohn, the director of education at American Compass, a conservative think tank and co-author of the book Why Do Protestants Convert, notes that centers of conversion to Catholicism are tiny, but they punch above their weight. These power centers, as he calls them, are often places that have influential Catholic university campuses. He says Washington is the most prominent of these, but that evangelical colleges with the great books, quote, great books curriculum also produce an inordinate number of converts. And he says it's because students from, quote, non-liturgical, non-historical, theologically shallow Protestant upbringings are getting exposed for the first time to the great Catholic authors. Littlejohn thinks that leads to an unfair competition where he frames it as my youth mega church pastor versus Thomas Aquinas.
And we know who's going to win in that one.
So my question to you, this makes me think about a couple of things. But the first one is why does the church in its regular course of teaching so often exclude exposure to the great thinkers of the faith, such as Aquinas or St. Augustine?
I would hesitate to say that it excludes. I think sometimes it takes a while to get to it. And sometimes there are people who are instructors who are just ignorant themselves and haven't had the exposure to the great thinkers of Western civilization and of the Catholic Church. But I go back to this. I was just finished reading John Henry Newman's The Development of Christian Dogma or Doctrine just recently. And he has an awesome quote in there. He says that the more a person becomes a student of history, the less likely they are to remain Protestant.
Right,
they're going to become Catholic.
Okay, but that's my point here. So I grew up and went to Catholic school only through my sixth grade,
right,
because I moved from Pennsylvania to Texas. And where we moved to Texas, there simply were no Catholic schools.
Mm-hmm, sure.
I know as part of my catechesis growing up, it was Catholic light. I mean, it was right after Vatican II, mm-hmm, and it was just...
It was a time of great confusion, too,
right,
in the church.
But I don't know that it's that much different. I remember my, you know, CCD classes, as they called them back then. I mean, I don't remember a thing that I learned about Catholic. I remember learning, right, about other religions. They were teaching us about some other religions before, mm-hmm, our confirmation. But there was certainly never any discussion about church theology. And in fact, I remember my mother-in-law, my deceased mother-in-law, who was one of probably the biggest influence on my life and my Catholic life. You know, I remember asking her, like, you know, 30, 40 years ago for some theology books to read because I was hungry,
sure,
for the faith, because I had never gotten any exposure to that, mm-hmm, through the pulpit or CCD or otherwise. And I think that's still the case where you don't get...
It is. In too many places, we stay at a very shallow and superficial level without really plumbing the depths of Catholic tradition and richness of teaching and philosophy and... there's so much but you could spend a whole lifetime delving into that, Chris. And I think you got to start somewhere, and you got to awaken that hunger. And it's a different path for each person. But really what it comes down to is people like your mother-in-law who love someone enough to share with them the faith.
But why not on the pulpit every Sunday where you've got the captive audience?
I can't speak for other priests. I try. I mean, I do my best to prepare good homilies that are engaging, that are deep, that point out for people, you know, different vantages to go deeper into their faith. I think, you know, this is Pope Francis spoke about this a lot, the importance of priests to prepare well their homilies, make sure that they're going deeper in their own study of the faith.
I mean,
that's our mission.
Right. But this article is kind of, you know, coming to a conclusion that there's fruit born from that, as
clearly,
right?
There's no doubt.
I don't get why, you know, I mean, I grew up in an era of every homily was, quote, God is love, you know, like what was
which
that?
Is true, but you've got to
right,
go beyond
like
that.
What the heck does that
right.
mean, you know?
Yeah.
And never any, you know,
nothing that would challenge you or
yeah
go
so and it's just this article makes me think that, you know, the way forward should be to challenge, to make it really, you know, deep and difficult and to struggle and wrestle with it.
Well, and bringing up a little bit of a tangent here, Chris, but I think that's the reason why a lot of younger people are gravitating towards traditional Latin Mass, because in those circles, they are presenting more of the history and the heritage and some of the deeper teachings within the Catholic Church. I'm neither condemn nor condone, but there's a hunger there for a deeper presentation of the truth of the Catholic faith, and where it is presented, where we go into Thomas Aquinas and all the incredible luminaries in the history of the church and really confront with their thought, their thinking, and how they face the deep problems of human existence, it catches their attention. We need to do more of that. Totally agreed. But at the same time, we shouldn't dismiss the efforts of those who are trying in difficult circumstances to get kids to an initial exposure to the faith. But I think it comes down to the personal connections like you with your mother-in-law. And of course, Chris, we should remember that, listening to shows like Crosswires and The Quest and other Catholic resources we have can help us to deepen in our faith.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. Lab-grown life has taken a major leap forward as scientists used AI to create a new virus that has never been seen before.
Whoa, is that a good idea? Didn't we do something with COVID that didn't end so well?
Right. Well, this virus is very simple. It has only 5,386 base pairs of DNA compared to the 3.2 billion found in humans.
Mm-hmm.
The virus is, by some, they don't even consider it to be living since it can't reproduce on its own. But just first, generally, creating new life forms. What do you think about that?
I think that's a pretty bad idea. Sounds like a Frankenstein type of effort going on.
Even if, let's say that there was some medical benefit to later be realized by doing something, you think it's just always messing with the wrong things?
I don't know. I'd have to think about it more from a moral standpoint, from the church's teaching. There are places where we can help human life, and we help in healing. And that's always morally legitimate. But once you start creating something, a new life form, gosh, that sounds a little bit too aggressive.
Right to me. Yeah,
like we're trying to play God.
Yeah.
And I don't know if anything good will come of that. I mean, I'd have to think about it more, but that's my initial gut reaction.
Well, in a related development, scientists have discovered an entirely new type of life form that occurs naturally.
Mm-hmm.
Trunk-like fossils discovered in 1843 have now been classified as an entirely new branch of life. The first scientist to examine these telephone pole-sized fossils did so in 1855, and he deemed them to be related to trees. Later, they determined that was wrong and reclassified it as some kind of land-based kelp or a megalithic mushroom. Now, they've determined prototaxites. This is a new form of life. Prototaxites is an entirely new branch of life form to add to the
so
six
not
currently
plants and they're not animals.
Right. There's six current recognized kingdoms of life. Okay. Animals, plants, fungi, protists, bacteria, and archaea. Now we've added prototaxites. Okay. I think it's kind of cool in this day and age to be, this far along where we think we are in, biology and science, that we've found a whole different type of life form. And
right.
It's like maybe what we'll find on other planets and shouldn't be surprised that we do find different branches of life.
It is pretty fascinating. And it's funny that you bring this up because just this morning I was perusing the local newspaper. They had this article about a new plant form that had just been classified and just discovered. Some botanist here in Atlanta who in 2019 had gone on an exploration to Vietnam and came back with a new plant. And they just realized 2 years ago that it's a new species that had never been found. This is one of the really fascinating things about this, Chris, because, God has this immense creativity in his creation, pardon the redundancy, that we can continue to discover. And it continues to amaze us and awe. This is a beautiful thing, and the church always encourages this type of discovery and scientific inquiry.
As we approach the 250th anniversary of America's founding this summer, the Wall Street Journal asks, why is it the flagship journal of the American Studies Association, which is American Quarterly, can't stand America? They note that 80% of articles published between 2022 and 2024 were critical of America, 20% were neutral, and none were positive. The negative angles focused on racism, imperialism, classism, sexism, xenophobia, homophobia, and transphobia. Even the articles that the journal flagged as neutral all had at least one reference to racism or sexism. Again, over a three-year period, they found not a single positive article. They contacted University of Texas historian Stephen Mintz for comment. His response was about the, referring to the field of American studies, was that a, quote, a field that once asked what is America, exploring its myths, music, monuments, and contradictions, now too often narrows its focus to a different question, quote, whom has America silenced, failed, or harmed, unquote. I remember as a kid, the lead up to the bicentennial, and how patriotic and positive the vibe was in school about the whole event that was about to occur. Now we are 6 months away, and I haven't heard anything from my kids about what's going on in schools or otherwise that would approach that or even referencing it. What are your thoughts?
That's an interesting perspective. Well, I'm a bicentennial baby, so you remember it, but I was born in it. And I think that you're really onto something interesting here. Now, this hypercriticism of our own country, you know, some people will say, well, if you really love someone, you criticize because you want them to be better. But I don't know, like in my own family or in my own, you know, religious community, if I just went around criticizing everyone all the time, I wouldn't really be showing love and it wouldn't be accepted well. And it would be ignoring all the good that there is. So even in a family dynamic, sometimes we have to hold back on some of the negativity, find the right time and find the right way to present it. And I don't think airing all these grievances with these sometimes made up intellectual categories is helpful for creating a sense of unity as a country. In my own leadership studies, one of the things that I found, which was really fascinating, is that petty leaders tend to emphasize diversity and differences in order to get people into separate tribes. They can, you know, set them up to fight against each other and then gain power in that way. Great leaders find the points of unity and convergence and help people rise to a higher
mission. And who would be the personification of a divider as a leader?
Oh, gosh. We could point to lots of them, but Satan is the great divider.
And who would be the personification of a unifier?
Jesus Christ. Always. And I think it's very interesting to look at that in the perspective of even our own country. I love listening to and reading books of wars because warfare tends to bring out the best and the worst of human nature. And right now I'm listening to a book on, it's called The 40 Thieves of Saipan. It's about the original 40 Marines who were kind of the precursors to the Delta Force. And they were received special training to fight against the Japanese. And it's just really interesting to go back in those time periods and recognize the values, the things that brought us together as a country. Sure, there's many bad things. There's things that we could have done better throughout history. But you don't see people, you know, trying to get into the borders of Cuba or into failed states. The people are flocking to the United States. And still, even to this day, why can't we recognize the good that so many other people around the world see?
Perhaps an emphasis on civics in school, and maybe if, like in Switzerland and other countries, everyone did 1 year of military service or otherwise, they would appreciate maybe what we have here.
Perhaps.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
According to multiple news outlets, an elderly woman in Canada was euthanized within hours of her husband claiming she had changed her mind after previously insisting she had wanted to die. Canada's medical assistance and dying laws allow patients to request euthanasia if an assessor agrees their condition meets certain requirements. Patients often wait weeks, but can be approved almost immediately if judged to be medically urgent by an assisted death provider. This woman was in her 80s and had complications after bypass surgery. As her condition got worse, her elderly husband struggled with her care, even with the help of daily nurse visits. The woman repeatedly expressed her desire for euthanasia to her family. However, when interviewed by an assessor, she wanted to withdraw her request, citing personal and religious beliefs. Her husband took her to a hospital the next morning where doctors found she was stable, but that her husband was experiencing, quote, experiencing caregiver burnout, unquote.
Mm-hmm.
Her husband asked for an urgent second euthanasia assessment later that day, and a different assessor showed up and recommended that she be euthanized, even though the first assessor objected. A third assessor was then sent, who agreed with the second one, and the elderly woman was euthanized that evening.
Oh.
Ontario's death review. Yes.
That is clear case of murder.
Yeah. So Ontario's death review committee, that's what it's called, their death review committee, mm-hmm. investigated. And their report noted another instance where an elderly woman was approved for euthanasia after a single meeting in which a family member relayed her supposed wish to die. Her consent on the day of her death was interpreted through hand squeezes.
Hmm.
Not even verbalized. This is where we're headed. With euthanasia. Tell me what you think about this. You already said it with murder.
Yeah, I mean, it's a clear case of murder. These type of situations are just what you expect when you start to get into a death mindset that, you know, somehow we need to be freed from the burden of this body and that we can take the lead on making that happen and not respecting the time frame that God has given us. It's a very, very slippery slope. I mean, 3 months ago, I was with my dad. He was in the hospital. He was suffering a lot. And he said multiple times, I just want to die. You know, I just was with him now, you know, a few weeks ago over the new year. And, you know, he's full of life. And he's, I'm just so joyful being with his grandkids.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard that before from elderly folks, that relatives of mine, parents, whatever. But that's different than saying I want to be euthanized.
Yes.
You know, but saying I'm ready to go, I want to die, is way different than saying I want to be euthanized.
People say all kinds of crazy things in moments of pain and suffering and weakness that we shouldn't take very seriously. And just like when someone is drunk and they'll say things that are off base, you don't take that as gospel truth or what their real desire is.
Well, how about this Orwellian named Ontario Death Review Board? It's just so...
Well, at least they haven't euphemized it.
Right, into the life ender, some sort of...
Or quality of life control yes. panel or
there
something.
There you go, that's what I like that.
You know, at least there's still the term death in there.
There's some truth to what they're doing, death.
But they're probably going to listen to this program and change the name afterwards. The great influence of Crossed Wires crosses the border.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com. Crossed
Wires. The headline from a January 23rd Wall Street Journal article reads, quote, I got a shocking diagnosis in my 40s. It explained everything, unquote. The author notes her diagnosis came on vacation in a shared van going from Mexico City to San Miguel de Allende. She struck up a conversation with the woman sitting next to her, who was a clinical psychologist from Toronto. They eventually talked about their love life. The psychologist noted that the author of the story that she seemed sensitive to rejection. Who isn't, right?
Mm-hmm.
And asked, had you ever been evaluated for ADHD? She goes on to explain that when she got back to her hotel, she Googled ADHD symptoms, and those included indecisiveness, losing things, frequently late, forgetting appointments, impatient, hyperverbal, intense emotions. So this
sounds like a human being.
This is like a horoscope, right? That, you know, where the predictions are so general that they apply to
everyone.
Right. So she concludes the article with a little bit of sanity that upon further reflection, she's coming around to the idea that she's meant to be this way. She says, maybe instead of being endlessly distractible, I'm someone who notices everything. Maybe instead of being reactive, I tend to radiate authenticity. So this is another in a long line of people looking for a diagnosis. I mean, for any shortcoming in life, there does not have to necessarily be a diagnosis.
Right. Well, that's a human tendency to point the finger at something or someone else to blame instead of taking responsibility for your own choices. You know, success in life doesn't come from diagnosing your problems and blaming others. It comes from just taking responsibility and working with the hand you've been dealt.
Well, I couldn't wait to read the comments to this article. So among the comments I read was one, this is quote, fantastic. Can't wait to have my husband read this. I have yet to find a stimulant medication that works. Folks then say, maybe I don't have true ADHD. I don't think so. I also have an overlap with ruminative OCD. Still, I'm high functioning and successful, but it's exhausting. Another one, I think, rightly points out, if everyone has ADHD, is it a disorder?
It's part of the human condition. And certainly, I mean, I work with a lot of people who tend to be very intelligent people who are, they're more agitated, they're more on edge, they're seeing things. That's fine, that's good. But I think diagnosing everyone with a disease is definitely a problematic trend.
The recent snowstorm that hit the eastern U.S. resulted in a, quote, no traditional snow day for New York City. Instead, according to new mayor Mamdani, it was to be a remote learning day. After COVID made remote instruction normal, city officials have defaulted to remote learning as the norm instead of a day off.
Poor kids.
The state, like most others, requires 180 days of instruction, and that school calendar is negotiated by the teachers' union. Mm-hmm. So according to the teachers' union, the United Federation of Teachers, they quoted their president as to why this couldn't be just a school day and have these kids out, you know, with no nothing to do but sled for the day. Mm-hmm. Michael Mulgrew, the president, he says, "We are on a very tight schedule, so the traditional snow days are gone." What does he blame? What do you think he blames for why the traditional?
Well, it's either racism or climate change. Well,
no, it's the number of religious holidays in New York City. That's why. No. Yes.
Are you serious?
I'm not kidding. He says because of the.
He didn't attribute it to climate change?
No, not climate change.
Oh, missed opportunity for
right?
him.
Well, maybe I didn't read the whole article. No, it's just, I can't believe. I mean, do you think there's any more religious holidays in New York now than there were 40 years ago?
Probably yes, actually, because you probably got a bigger Muslim population than you used to have, and that's more prominent. So they've probably granted more of the Muslim holidays. You've got the Indians
right.
that really probably weren't as prevalent in the city as in the past, and they've got their own set of holidays.
I don't know that they're doing. Man, maybe they are.
There's
I mean, if
Hindu
anything,
holidays.
I would think less. I mean, it used to be that Holy Week, you know, schools were off. Holy Thursday. Good Friday
right.
sometimes, you know, Easter Monday,
right.
you know, oftentimes now they're in session on Good Friday.
True. Yeah,
right. So I would think if anything, it's less. I just can't believe they cop out to that. It's religious holidays. Of course, it's religious holidays.
If there's a topic you'd like Father Daniel to address, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back again next week with a different take on the news.
This has been Crossed Wires, navigating news with faith, with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens on AM 1160, The Quest.